Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and how the tech are ya? It's time for a classic episode. It's a Friday, so let's listen to part two of the two-part episodes that I did, started last week. This is the Moog story part two. If you have not heard part one, that published last Friday, so you should go check that out. This episode originally published back on February 10th, 2016. Enjoy.
Filters. You probably heard about filters, right?
Oh, of course.
You run this through a filter. What filters are doing is they're specifically changing the harmonic content of a signal. And it lets you narrow down the range of frequencies that are allowed in any produced sound. Like you can specify which harmonics are allowed to go through, which ones are not allowed to go through. And that alters the quality, the tonal quality of any sound you make. So I'm going to start talking about some particular filters, and our producer extraordinaire, Noel, is going to provide us with some examples of some of the stuff we talk about. So from this point forward, Noel's really going to have free rein to go crazy Broadway style.
I encourage him highly to interrupt us as often as possible with strange noises.
If he hasn't already, I expect him to do so from this point forward. That's the wonderful thing about Noel not being in the room while we record. We have no way of knowing what he's going to add after this is done. But at any rate, so you can change the amplitude, which obviously changes the volume, and you can change the frequency, which changes the pitch. Uh-huh. Those are very basic, right? But beyond that, you can start to really have fun with it. So filters are ways to change the timbre of the sound even within a single note. So you can press a note with no filter, it's going to sound one way. And then you apply a filter and press that same key to create that same note, but it's going to have a different quality. So one of the basic types of filters would be what's called a low-pass filter or a high-pass filter.
Okay.
Very simple concept. The name tells you what it lets it do. So a low pass filter. It lets low frequencies pass through. It blocks high frequencies. Now you can define where's your cutoff. So you can say like any frequency above this is not allowed through. Anything that's lower than that can go through.
Now I'm going to ask the question I think some listeners may be wondering.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Why would there be multiple frequencies playing when you've got a single tone playing? Shouldn't that be one frequency if you're playing one pitched note?
You could be playing one pitched note if your wave is just a sine wave, right? Uh-huh. A sine wave is a pure tone. It means it's a fundamental frequency. There's no harmonic added to it. But that's only one type of waveform you can play with a synthesizer. You can actually create different types of waveforms like sawtooth waves or square waves or triangular waves. And each of those contains harmonics. Harmonics being multiples of your fundamental frequency. Your fundamental frequency is always going to be the loudest, the one with the greatest amplitude, right? So the note you're playing, there's a specific frequency associated with that note. Its amplitude is going to be the greatest in the full sound wave. But with these other waveforms, triangular, square, and sawtooth, you get multiples of that particular frequency that also show up, and those are harmonics.
But if you don't want to hear any of those high harmonics, you just want that deep, nasty bass rumble.
Yeah, you could do it a low-pass filter, and what that does is it actually, you would think it would be like a really bass sound, but it really kind of makes it sound sort of muffled and dark.
Uh-huh.
And then if you wanted instead to do the opposite, you could put a high pass filter on. High pass filter, obviously, the higher frequencies are allowed to pass through and it blocks the lower frequencies.
Sounds kind of bright and jangly.
Exactly. Much, much brighter sound. So Noel, I'm sure, can give us examples of what it sounds like to listen to some tones played through a low pass filter. And some tones played through a high-pass filter. There are a couple of others that I want to mention that also are pass filters, but they are a little different from low and high. There's the band-pass filter, which allows a group of frequencies that are between the high and low ends to pass through. So in other words, you're saying, all right, anything below this frequency, I want you to cut out. Anything above this frequency, I want you to cut out. Everything in between can pass. And that gives you a different sound. Or band reject filters, which specify a specific range of frequencies that are not allowed to go through, but everything else can. So it's essentially like bouncers. Okay, here's a list of people. They absolutely are not allowed in the club. My name is always on that list. All the time. At least that's what they tell me. But apparently my friend Benjamin Franklin, he gets in all the time. Now, beyond those filters, you can do some other fun stuff. For one thing, you remember I said that an analog sound wave is continuous?
Of course.
Right. So it doesn't have a discrete value where there's a stop-start. Partly because of that, cutoffs, like where you say, here's where I want the filter to begin, are a little hazy. So When you have these filters, you also have a transition band. The transition band is a small band of frequencies that will still play through, where you've set your cutoff. So in other words, if you say your cutoff is 5,000 hertz, anything below 5,000 hertz, cut that off. It's not a hard stop at that frequency. There's actually, it trails a little bit, which gives kind of an interesting effect, right? So that's really cool. But beyond that, you can start to do things like adjust a filter while you're actually playing a tone. You can do this by hooking up different modules together. I'll talk about some of the other modules in a second. And that's
creates a wah sound, you say?
Wah! Like the frequency.
Not like a Hans Zimmer kind of wah.
It's the way it sounds, like the pitch remains the same,
uh-huh.
But the tone of the note is different. So the pitch doesn't change, But the quality of the sound changes. Noel, I'm sure, could play for us the sound of a note where the filter is changed while the note is still playing so that we can kind of get an idea of what that sounds like. And another thing you can do is play with resonance. And one way you can play with resonance is you take the frequencies that are close to that cutoff frequency where, you know, you've set the filter boundaries. And instead of just having them play out to a speaker, you feed them back in to the filter. This creates a feedback loop. And
I believe it's called a lope.
How many more times are we going to have that joke? All right. So it creates a feedback loop and it also changes the timbre and volume of the pitches that you're playing, which is really cool. So that's all in just talking about filters. There are other modules that we can mention. That's just one subset of modules. Another one is called the envelope generator.
You know, there's a great scene in that documentary where, I don't know if you saw this one because I think you saw part of it.
Yeah.
Where Bob Moog himself is showing off one of his machines.
Uh-huh.
And he sort of like rubs his hand luxuriously over the envelope while he speaks of it.
Does it get uncomfortable?
No. It's kind of sweet. You can tell he has a love for this envelope. He has a relationship with this envelope.
Yeah. And you might wonder, well, what the heck is this thing anyway? Well,
it's another section of the board.
Yeah. And it's, you know, as you might imagine, as we're talking about these different oscillators, these different waveforms and these different filters, it's already starting to sound pretty complicated. I mean,
right.
You've got all these different knobs and stuff to control things. And maybe you want to have various effects apply to your music, but you can't by hand constantly adjust this or employ a second person to on the fly make these changes to filters so that the notes you produce have the quality that you want. Envelopes are kind of like macros in the software world where you make shortcuts where you hit control and a letter and suddenly it creates like a series of commands that otherwise would take you multiple mouse or keystrokes to actually execute. Same sort of thing, except in this case, we're talking about analog circuitry. So envelope generators can react to an incoming signal and then send out a new signal to a different module. And so it's another if-then gate. So if signal X comes into the envelope generator, then send Y signal to this other module so that you get the effect you want. And one type of envelope generator, one common one, is the ADSR, and that stands for attack, decay, sustain, and release, which are kind of like four phases in a note. So have you ever played with a synthesizer where you press down on a key and the sound kind of comes up to a level and then backs off just a little bit?
Oh, yeah. That's the slow attack.
That's the attack. Yeah, that's the attack and decay, actually, because the rise in volume is the attack.
Right.
When it hits its peak and starts to come back down just a bit, like let's say that there's a scale of 0 to 1. You press down the key. It goes from 0 up to 1. Then it falls back to maybe 0.7. That fall back to 0.7 would be the decay phase. So the attack phase is going from 0 to 1, decay then 1 to 0.7. That part happens usually pretty quickly, right? And then you're still got the key held down. As long as you have the key held down, the note is playing. That's the sustain. When you release the key, you get to the release phase, which trails the note off. And you can adjust all of these things. You can adjust it so that the attack takes longer, so that the buildup to the peak and then the decay is more, you know, it's taking kind of the scenic route. Or you can make the release last a really long time so that the note trails off, like you have a long sort of sustaining note. All of these are things you can adjust using this type of technology, which gives you an incredible amount of flexibility when you are trying to create a specific sound. And one of the things that I think really makes synthesizers in general, and the Moog in particular, incredibly special. It makes me wish that I were capable of playing one. I only plink around on keyboards, so it's pretty pathetic. Noel is like a master.
Jonathan, what's the song you always play when you sit down at a piano? Everybody has that annoying thing they do,
yeah.
The one song they know how to play, and they sit down and they do it.
Well, there are two songs that I tend to play. One is the theme to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Makes sense.
I mean, that's great triumphant music.
Yep.
And it's Nazi killing music.
Yeah, it is. And then the other one is Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. That's kind of the two that I do. But I've also been known to do Ode to Joy. No.
Okay.
So that's
a bit of the old Ludwig van.
That's right. I've been, obviously the actual Ode to Joy movement, which is from, you know, a much longer symphony, the Ninth Symphony. It's only that one section that I do. I can't play any of the rest of it. And I can't really play that one very well. It's like two finger typing. It's like that, except with keyboard.
I'm sure you're an astonishing plinker.
Yeah. Occasionally, you know, if I want to get fancy, you know, chopsticks is where it's at.
I'm a big fan of the Jaws theme myself.
Yeah, nice, nice. I've been known to do the musical motif from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Okay.
Which you can play just on the black keys.
We'll be back with more on the Moog story after this quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's one other thing I want to mention, a couple other things, actually. One is the low-frequency oscillator. Low-frequency oscillators, also known as LFOs, they control other modules by sending a low frequency. It's so low that it's sub-audial. You can't hear it. It's below 20 hertz.
Yeah.
And they send a signal to other modules to alter a sound. So this is one of the ways you can make that sort of vibrato sound in a sustained note is altering this by using a low frequency oscillator. It gives it that wavy quality. Maybe Noel can demonstrate. And then you can always use a control signal to change the frequency of another module. That's called frequency modulation, or FM. By the way, all these things I'm talking about changing frequencies of electronic signals, it doesn't just apply to synthesizers. Like frequency modulation, oscillators, changing these things, this is all basic electronics, whether you're making a sound or doing something else. It's not just in creating music, but we're, of course, specifically framing it in that because the topic is the Moog. So these are all super cool elements that give the Moog that quality it possesses, that really unusual sound. That unique sound, maybe, instead of unusual. I wouldn't want to say something that would have offended Moog himself. By unusual, I mean unique, not bad. These things could get monstrously huge. Like I've seen synthesizers that didn't have any keyboard attached to them at all. It was just the various modules to demonstrate what the modules do. So all you had were the various modules, cables to hook, physically hook the modules together,
playing them by plugging and unplugging cables
and turning dials. And you would have maybe an oscilloscope to see the waveform. So you had something visual there too. But it was all just plugging and unplugging cables, patching in filters, taking filters out by directly connecting modules.
You know, that's interesting because when Moog and Deutsch were originally designing the Moog, the synthesizer that would, maybe it was the Abominatron. I don't know. But their original model, they were talking about the idea and they were discussing whether or not it should have a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
The keyboard is sort of the obvious way to control the variable of pitch.
Sure.
But the question is, should we have gone with something else? Because does the keyboard inherently suggest this is really just a different kind of piano? It's
right.
A modified piano. You should approach it like a piano, use it like a piano. You bring your piano playing behaviors to the machine. And they were torn on that because they were thinking, well, if we didn't include the keyboard, might that help encourage people to use this to generate sounds in a way that's truly new and doesn't mimic the way we've used other instruments before?
Right.
Of course, we know they did end up going with the keyboard, and that kind of makes sense because a keyboard's a very useful and intuitive way to control pitch.
But, well, especially when you get to a point where you're capable of producing more than one tone by pressing more than one key at once, right? Some early synthesizers were only capable of performing, like, you press one key and that's the sound you would get, but you would not be able to create harmonies with some early synthesizers where, you know, if you change from key to key, you change the pitch, but you couldn't hold down a chord and have all three notes play in some early, early synthesizers.
I think that's the case with the Moog, isn't it?
I believe so. And that would mean that you could change out the keyboard for something like a lever. Then you pull the lever, and maybe when you pull the lever in one direction, the pitch increases, and when you push the lever the other direction, the pitch lowers. That could have been the control device, or anything else, really. It didn't have to be the keyboard. But they decided ultimately to have the keyboard because, again, it. I think you're right. I think it makes it easier to understand how to produce the sound you want to produce. It becomes less... It slightly steps away from the element of performance art, the way a theremin kind of is. Like, you can get a really skilled theremin player to create particular sounds and even play particular pieces of music,
uh-huh.
But it is hard. It is an art to learn how to do that. And even then, it's very imprecise.
I think they probably should have replaced the keyboard with a big, big row of holes filled with a putty-like goo that you have to insert your fingers into to play the note.
Starting to make me think of like some sort of combination of a musical instrument and the tree of death in Flash Gordon.
Reach inside and discover the true tones of the future.
Right. So, let's talk about waveforms, because we mentioned them a little bit with sine waves, square waves, triangle waves, sawtooth waves. What the heck do all of these mean? And we've already talked about what a waves period is. We've talked about frequency and amplitude. And, for a lot of this, I'm going to be looking at using the example of a 100 hertz wave, or frequency rather, 100 hertz frequency, so that it makes it easy for me to use the math to describe the different waveforms.
Okay.
Because if I go with something that's not easy, then I would have to do a whole bunch of different calculations of the ugly.
Let us ride this wave, sir.
So I mentioned earlier, sine waves are that pure wave. It's that fundamental frequency. This would be the same as if you were to take a tuning fork and ring it. It's going to create a true tone with no harmonics. It's a single sound. And so at 100 hertz, you would have a wave where its period is being repeated 100 times every second. And that's all you would get. Just that. And it would be at a steady amplitude unless you were adjusting the volume. So again, amplitude refers to how loud it is in this case for sound. And also what's really neat is that, you know, we depict this with the peaks and valleys on an XY axis, whereas the X axis, the horizontal axis, that represents time, and the vertical axis represents the amplitude, the volume. If you were to match up two sound waves that are identical, but the peaks of one sound wave are matched with the troughs of the other sound wave perfectly, they cancel each other out. So you play these two sounds simultaneously. If they line up in that way, they cancel one another out. It's like all the atoms can't move because they're pushing against each other and not actually creating the vibration required for you to hear a noise. Noise canceling headphones work on a pretty similar principle to this, to some degree. So that's kind of interesting. All right. So let's talk about sawtooth waves. If you look at these, it looks like a ramp, and then the ramp goes up and to the right and then immediately drops off, like it has a vertical drop and then moves up and to the right again. And, that's why it's called sawtooth. It looks like the teeth of a saw blade. These, when you play them, have a buzzing sound that's really strong and clear. So this is what a sawtooth wave sounds like. Now, those are made by combining a series of sine waves at different frequencies and volume levels. The loudest sine wave defines the frequency of the overall sawtooth wave, and that is the fundamental frequency. And the other sine waves represent the harmonics, which are ideally at a frequency that complements the fundamental one. So generally what we talk about are multiples of the fundamental frequency. That's why I'm going to start with a 100 hertz. So at 100 hertz, your next multiple, the first harmonic would be number two, because number one is your fundamental. That's 100 hertz. Number two would be 200 hertz, because it's the multiple that's the harmonic. Number three is 300 hertz. Four is 400 hertz, so on and so forth. Multiple and harmonic number are the same thing, is what I'm trying to get across. All of those are playing at the same time, but the amplitude of the harmonics is lower than the amplitude of the fundamental frequency, meaning they're quieter. Right. They're not overwhelming. Otherwise, you would just have noise.
Right.
So, it drops with each step further away from the fundamental frequency, and it stretches on effectively into infinity. Eventually, it gets to a point where it's so low that it's impossible for us to understand. So, yeah, while the wave effectively, or the harmonics effectively go on into infinity, eventually, one, you hit a frequency that humans cannot perceive, and two, it's
maybe
at
you can.
Well, in general, humans have trouble perceiving, and it's at an amplitude that's so low that you wouldn't be able to hear it anyway. The volume is too low for you to be able to detect it. But that's what gives the sawtooth wave that tonal character. Then you've got square waves, which look very square. I mean, if you were to look at them, they almost look like the the battlements you might see on the top of a castle wall or something. And square waves contain harmonics like a sawtooth wave, but it only contains the odd-numbered harmonics. So you don't have harmonic number 2. If you start with 100 hertz, you wouldn't have 200 hertz as a harmonic. It would be skipped. But you would have 300.
Huh.
And 500 and 700 and 900. But you skip all the even-numbered harmonics. You only include the odd ones. And there's an actual formula for how quiet those harmonics are. What you do is you take the harmonic number and then you do the inversion of that. You invert it. So harmonic 3, you would invert to 1 over 3 or 0.3333. It would have that. That would be its amplitude compared to the fundamental frequency. 5 would be 1/5 of the amplitude of the fundamental frequency. 7 would be 1/7, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down the line.
We'll be concluding the Moog story after this quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a square wave is going to have a tone that a lot of our listeners are going to recognize because it's the type of wave generated by classic video game console systems, like the Nintendo Entertainment System would be a great example.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You got to stop. You got to stop and tell me. What's your favorite NES 8-bit video game music?
I know it's kind of lame to go with such a popular answer, but I really like The Legend of Zelda.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah.
You know,
I really like Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
And it's a great tune.
I really remember liking the music that went with the old NES Batman game, which was one of the only movie-based games for the NES that wasn't horrible.
Yeah, that wasn't like just a complete travesty of the franchise rights.
Oh, it was a pretty good game.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That one
had great music. You remember it went do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yep. And I never owned an NES, but I had a friend who did, and he had that game, so I do remember that. But anyway, this is what those square waveforms sound like, in case you wanted to know. So yeah, you could tell they're a little less buzzy than the sawtooth waves. The square ones are slightly less buzzy, but they still have some character to them. And then we have triangle waves. Triangle waves hate person waves. They have a fight. Triangle wins. Also, they have a more mellow sound than your square waves or sawtooth waves do. So they kind of sit between square waves and sine waves. They also have harmonics, and they also have only odd numbered harmonics like the square waves do. So just 3, 5, 7, 9, etc. You don't have any even numbered harmonics in the triangle waves. And, in this case, the amplitude of the harmonics is it drops off faster than it does with the square waves. So in square, remember, it's the inversion of the harmonic number. So 3 is 1/3, 5 is 1/5. With triangle waves, it is the inversion of the square of the harmonic. So it's 1/3 squared or 1/9 or 0.1 repeating.
Huh.
So it's that amplitude compared to the fundamental frequency. And then, etc. down the road. So it'd be 1/5 squared, 1/7 squared, 1/9 squared, etc. And that would be your amplitude of your harmonics to the fundamental frequency. So that's your basic ones. Oh, and a triangle wave, we should definitely hear what that sounds like. It sounds like this. So those are your basics. Like those are the basic qualities of sound you could use. You could choose which type of wave you wanted the oscillator to generate with your Moog synthesizer, and then put that through the various filters and other modules that we talked about to create all sorts of interesting sounds and really give your music a very interesting character before you even start playing a melody.
So with all of the richness of a variety of electronic music that you can create with synthesizers, we're focusing on analog synthesizers today, but really with any kind of electronically generated music, there's a lot you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Why do some people still regard it as fake music?
Because some people just, I think, are narrow-minded jerk faces. No, I don't want to really suggest that. I think though this is one of those things that historically we've seen repeated, you know, many times, even before the age of electronic music at all. We saw this, like, just with composers' styles.
Yeah.
And you've heard stories of how after the performance of a particular symphony, an audience might riot in reaction because it was so different from what came before it. And I think that's part of it. I think there's some people who just have trouble accepting the idea that something different from what has come before can add any value. And if it doesn't fit their definition of what is music, it therefore cannot be music. I don't believe in that. I mean, I will go so far as to say, like, there's definitely some experimental music out there that to me sounds indistinguishable from random noise. Like, there are some performance art pieces, and some of them are meant to be like that, like dropping objects onto piano wires from like 20 feet up so that you can create these loud noises. It's not like that's done with surgical precision to create a very specific sound. And that's not what the intent of the piece is. And it gets tricky for me to refer to that as music because it doesn't fit my definition, my personal definition of what music is. So I'm even guilty of that to some extent.
One example I think of that comes up is, for example, drum machines.
Yeah.
You hear that criticized all the time.
Sure.
People are like, oh, you know, the music these days, any idiot with a drum machine can just make some loops and then they're a musician. That's not real music.
Or people who program music into, like, it's possible to program music into a computer file without ever touching any kind of musical instrument, right?
Well, sure.
You could, in theory, create music just by manipulating numbers if you have a great enough affinity for that. I don't think that makes the music any less valid than anything else. I don't think that there should be a...
In fact, how different is that from being a composer who composes music for a symphony and doesn't play it him or herself?
Right. Yeah, I would argue that is very similar. And I also just think that the creation of music goes beyond how skillful you are at tickling the ivories or being able to pluck strings.
I'm sorry, what did you just say?
To tickle the ivories.
Tickle the ivories?
That's playing piano.
Where on earth did you learn that expression?
What are you kidding me?
Tickle
the ivories.
Tickle them.
You've never heard this phrase.
No.
Are you telling me that, oh my gosh, well, I am older than you are. Tickle the ivories is a phrase that means play the piano.
Okay, I guess I'll just have to go home and beat up my guitar.
Well, I'm just saying a phrase that doesn't matter. At any rate, I don't think that musical ability.
I'm gonna go roughly chop my drums.
I don't think that. Look, I'm talking about tickling the ivories, and you're going into abuse.
No. I mean, I'm thinking of all the bizarre things you can do with your hands that are not playing a musical instrument.
Okay, well, that's fair. So,
I'm sorry. Now I'm the one being judgmental. I apologize, Jonathan. I think you should feel free to tickle the ivories however you like, and I won't judge you for it.
I just can't believe you never heard that phrase before.
I've never heard that.
Okay, well, it's pretty common down my way. But at any rate, we had a lot of ivory ticklers when I was growing up. So yeah, the point being that I don't think that there's any particular skill that you have to possess in order to be someone who makes music other than the ability to create a melody or, you know, to actually create the music in whatever mode you use to do it doesn't matter. Right?
Well, I mean, regardless, like, why would we even consider ourselves in the business of certifying what counts as being a musician or not? Why is that our job to tell people, no, that's not real music?
This honestly reminds me a lot of the debate of whether or not video games are art or if video games just contain art. So in other words, like, yeah, the graphics in a video game can be considered art. The music accompanying a video game can be considered art. But is a video game itself art? And there's people who very violently say, absolutely not. There is no way a video game itself could be art.
Do they have some kind of, like, philosophical principle informing this opinion?
I think they just have some sort of ridiculous, narrow definition of what they think art has to fall
like
into.
They're building that, yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that the electronic music has fallen into that same thing, that some people, for them, they have a very narrow definition of what music is, and electronic music falls outside of that definition, so therefore it cannot be music by definition. Problem is, that's not everyone's definition. I have a much broader opinion of what is music. Maybe not as broad as other people. In fact, certainly not as broad as other people. I know there are folks who like music that I just find baffling. Like, there's no appeal to me. So, I know that I'm also guilty of that. But I'm at least aware of it.
Hope you enjoyed that classic episode, that two-parter on the Moog story. The Moog synthesizer, or the Moog synthesizer, is one of those really distinctive instruments that was incredibly influential and remains incredibly influential. It's still used in lots of modern compositions and songs and stuff. And it just is one of those super cool sounds that is really appealing to me. So I hope you enjoyed this two-part episode series. If you have suggestions for topics I should cover in future episodes of Tech Stuff, you can get in touch with me a couple different ways. One is to use the iHeartRadio app. You can navigate to the Tech Stuff page using a little search icon. There's a little microphone icon you can click on.
Click on that. You leave a voice message up to 30 seconds in length. Or you can head on over to Twitter, send me a message via Twitter. The handle we use is TechStuffHSW. And let me know what it is you'd like me to cover in future episodes. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.